Hey, welcome to the Product Leadership Podcast from Lighthouse London, where we talk about how to validate, launch, and maintain successful digital products with product owners, innovators, digital experts, and founders. Lighthouse London are a digital design and product development team who spent the last 10 years helping people conceive, build, and steer digital products. You can find out more about us and more podcast episodes at wearelighthouse.com. Enjoy the show. Hey, everyone. Welcome back after a long break to the Lighthouse podcast. It's been about half a year, I think. Shameful.
I'm glad you acknowledged that, actually. Yeah. I wondered if we were just going to pretend, like, pave over it, like we never disappeared.
It's been going through my mind as to whether we should talk about that, and I feel like honesty is always the best policy.
Yeah.
So I'm being brutally honest. Mm. I think it's actually more like 9 months. But anyway, I'm Tom. And I'm joined by Russ.
Hi, guys.
Hey, you've not been on here for even longer.
No, it's been, even longer. I think you and, in fact, I guess you were just managing it for a while.
For a long time.
With a lot of special guests.
Many funky guests, and you can go back and listen to the archives of all the fun things we've been talking about from a product perspective. But today we're back talking about something slightly different, all related. And I think that the focus for the next few podcasts is mainly going to be around UX and UI. Mm-hmm. So Russ leads up our design team, and we wanted to talk a little bit about a load of the projects we've had in recently and some ways in which we think that us and you as UX or UI design teams can work well with development teams.
So I think we've got a unique perspective on the collaboration between design and development teams, partly just because we've always had in-house development, and also, like, just ourselves, like, we're both design and dev, and that gives us a bit of a perspective on where that collaboration is difficult, and some of the problems that you can run into. One thing that we find is that design and development teams need to find a common ground. They're quite different skill sets, and there needs to be some kind of shared language and understanding between those parties. And often we find that issue is maybe realised too late in a project.
Definitely. We've seen that loads. I mean, we're guilty of that as well, but part of the reason why we've tried to solve that in recent years. Mm-hmm. You kind of find that when that kind of breakdown happens, or when that kind of common ground's not there, that a lot of the work you do is undone. Management breaks down as well. So it's a kind of recipe for disaster. It might not be something that kills a project, but we found that, good work to find that common ground will stand you in good stead for the start of the project and an ongoing relationship as well.
Yeah, I think that lets the investment pay off. If you're, investing in design, you want to ensure that once the handover's happened, that it's worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so there's a like, we've just listed a few examples of when this can go wrong, so bad things that can happen. So we might as well just quickly run through them. Mm-hmm. The kind of first one from us is, when we come in as an external design team, it's quite easy, and we've seen this happen as well, is to come in and design something amazingly beautiful that then the team you're working with can't really easily implement. It's quite simple it's quite easy to come in and sell the dream and then walk away and not have to fix a kind of problem that actually you've caused. So that's a big bone of contention that we've seen happen in the past.
One thing that we've seen is that a design team can put in a lot of work and effort into a set of deliverables and then don't put in the time to explain it and give their reasoning, their thinking, and how they imagine it being implemented. And that kind of just leaves the next team with a void.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose it's like you're doing creative work, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't document what you're doing. It's an important part of any development plan is to document your code, what you're after and what you're doing, sorry. And that should also apply to design. Next one is the idea of kind of skills gaps or available resource, really. It's really important that you understand what skills you have available to you from a design team when you're working with a development team. What are they good at? What can they handle? Where might they struggle with the things that you're doing? And also, what time have you got there? How many hours or days or whatever of implementation time have you got so that you can build something or design something that's appropriate for the resource that you have?
So then we also were thinking around development teams that by no fault of their own don't prioritize and don't quite understand what the user experience slant is of what they're met with and what they've been asked to deliver. And again, that isn't their fault. It's just a completely different skill set. So it's up to the designers to kind of communicate and be the voice of that in the project.
Yeah, I think the last one that we identified, and probably like the the most important really is just communications breakdown. So a lot of what we've talked about here is solvable just by chatting to people. And we've often found that, you know, the bigger the teams, the larger the company, the easier it is for people to work in silos. And that, you know, just regular comms and talking to each other is often the way to solve a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
Tom here. We've been working with a bunch of larger clients recently to build bespoke digital upskilling programs. This is usually creative workshops where we come in, help people understand top skills that they can use in their everyday work life that many of the main startups and entrepreneurs around the world will use. If you want to find out more, head over to wearelighthouse.com. So, I mean, suppose why do you trust us, right? Well, we do this kind of thing all the time. And I think, like we said at the start, there's a lot of projects we've worked on recently where we are kind of guns for hire. We come in and help people kind of create a makeover for their existing product or do detailed UX UI work on a kind of complex tool. So we've had a lot of experience doing this, and we've been trying to solve these problems. So where do we come in? You know, there's a product team in place. They're managing day-to-day feature builds. You know, they're pushing the product forward from a technical perspective. No UX UI in-house. I mean, they might have actually never even really been a UXer working on the product at all. You've got a team who are really keen on making changes, like they're invested in this product, they want to push it forward, and they probably see the value of what a UX team can provide, but they have no skill and not necessarily any understanding of how you get good results from a project like this. So what we've had to do is design a process that gives you a way to communicate what you're doing with the dev team, you know, senior stakeholders, that gives them the right assets they need to kind of push things forward and implement everything. So, I mean, coming on from that, how do we fix this?
Yeah, I think one of the main things to nail is communication, as you mentioned. That's one of the most important things. You know, the kind of old idea that you can bring in the design team, they hand over the work, and then suddenly the next team has to deal with it doesn't really make sense. And really, you need to have all parties involved as often as you can. You know, that kind of constant conversation where you have different disciplines, you know, collaborating together and discussing a problem means that the solutions that you come up with, you know, make sense and aren't unrealistic. You don't want to have, you know, two teams just working in silos completely in isolation. Then you do have issues with when those teams come back together again. I think, you know, the regular checking in with people and also being able to see what another team is working on, make sure that everyone has that kind of like, single kind of central location that they can work together in.
Yeah, I think the second one is probably, communication first, but then visibility is really important as well. So, you know, you as a team are going to be delivering stuff on a regular basis, and that needs to go to the right people to sign off. So it's no good doing a lot of work with one or two people who are the kind of stakeholders and senior people who are running the project. Like, you've got to have people seeing what's happening along the way who are going to be implementing that work, because often, you know, you get to too late a stage, the dev team or the person who's actually coding the feature you've designed come back to you and say, actually, this is completely impossible, or it's not suitable, or this has just added another week to our schedule. So that's something that's really important to kind of, you know, that kind of feedback loop, that feature design loop has to be, you know, designed, in fact. And you need to make sure that people are kind of got their eyes on what you're doing so that you just don't spiral out into something that causes a mess.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, the client feels that they can be the in-between person and they kind of sit between two teams and they're fielding both sides. But actually, you just need to connect those two teams together. Otherwise, yeah, it only leads to problems.
I mean, most of the times when we're working on these kind of product makeovers, you know, we're working quite closely with the dev team, and that's ideal. But you do get into situations, certainly when you're talking with a kind of more enterprise client, when the person you're talking to is potentially a project manager, who is great because, you know, we need people to manage projects, but that barrier maybe, or that go-between between you and the kind of tech partner, that can often cause an issue.
Yeah, I'd also say that the next thing that's crucially important is planning, and that usually breaks down into a backlog and a schedule that both teams can work towards. So usually in our projects, we'll have at the end of a discovery phase, we've tried to work in backlog of our top to-dos that both teams can be looking at. There's some instances where you might have two backlogs, one for each kind of workflow. But those are kind of different situations either side.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important to to plan in a way that makes sense per team, per project. So, you know, we work agile, so kind of like agile UX is something that we try and do quite a lot. I'm sure many people out there work in exactly the same way. And that really comes from the fact that most teams we're working with, most product teams are working in exactly the same way. So, you know, we're booking in tasks to carry out over the next week, 2 weeks, whatever the sprint length is, that directly feeds into their kind of product lifecycle. So it's kind of important to assess the situation of the teams you're working with and try and fit in with them as best as possible. There's no real point. It usually doesn't work when you dictate how you want people to work that kind of completely spoils the flow of how their product team works. So it's kind of important to, like I said, at the start of the project, assess how you're going to arrange your workflow and how you're going to deliver stuff to the people that are going to be implementing the work.
Tom, have you got an ideal sprint length yet? Have you found your preference?
A year.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, yeah. A sort of giant project over a year. Yeah, that's
you might
a good
call
sprint.
It waterfall. No, that's a very bad idea, obviously. 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
I don't know.
I'm into one-day sprints.
Wow.
The first one's called Monday. It's got the deliverables at the end, planning at the beginning.
Retro on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Friday.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Just kidding. 1 week is the only sprint length. Hey, this is Russ. Recently, we've been helping our clients overcome huge, complex problems using design sprints. It's a really interesting tool for us to get in a room with a client, you know, share this big workspace and come up with lots of ideas and solutions for big problems. If that sounds like something that you could be interested in, head over to wearelighthouse.com for more. In terms of managing a roadmap, one thing that's obviously helpful for prioritization is how much effort an item or a task or a user story involves from each team. We've seen quite a few ways people have approached this in terms of assigning points, number of hours, like low, mid, high traffic light system. But it's important for anyone involved in the project to be able to order that list by, you know, the low hanging fruit versus, you know, high impact items that might take, you know, 6 or 7 sprints to get to. But yeah, having a backlog that's prioritized by efforts on both sides, that's definitely the way to kind of plan your next few sprints.
Yeah, we've often, you know, when coming into a new project, obviously it's quite hard because, you know, some of the things we work on are really complex. They're tools that have existed for years. You know, we're doing total rehauls in some cases of like the entire sort of design system of them. And it's when you're kind of starting out and know the least about a project or a product, it's very hard to know what goes in the roadmap. So that weighted feature set at the end is something that's really important because it allows us and the, you know, product managers and the dev team to look at stuff and kind of assess collectively what we should actually be working on, like what's the first step, what's the most sensible stuff to do. Because if something's got a huge dev effort but is easy from a design perspective, you know, having not done that weighting, you might move down the wrong path and essentially start building something that's impossible to implement. Another thing that's, you know, and this just goes down to like how you'd initially engage with someone, is that low-hanging fruit idea is something that's quite good to think about. So they might not be like super major tasks, or might not be ones that completely bring immediate huge value, but as a way to test out like your first sprint and see how working of this new team goes, like just do a bunch of smaller tasks. You know, what can you do really quickly and easily that's simple from a UX perspective, mm-hmm. and simple from a dev perspective, and just see how that relationship goes. Because, you know, it's like anything, you can plan as much as you want, but until you do something and actually collaborate, you'll never know how that relationship works.
Yeah, definitely. Even just completing those smaller tasks gives you a bit of a velocity for your team, right? So what you thought was a small task, you now know roughly how long it takes for both teams to complete it. Then you know how long your sprint's going to be, that kind of thing. So yeah, definitely ticking off a few smaller items from the list makes a lot of sense at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, because I mean, we could do an entire podcast season on estimating, probably. Everyone knows it's one of the hardest things you can do, and I think velocity is a good word there, because you do want to just see how this like feedback loop goes, how people mesh together, and just how easy collaboration is, and that's just a great way to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the last point to make there around prioritization is we tend to build a new backlog for a product by starting with a research phase, so talking to stakeholders and talking to existing users and finding the middle ground there of what's important for both parties. And that gives us a nice kind of list of good reasoning for why we should work on something. If you just came in blind, the designers would be saying, oh, that doesn't work very well and this is rubbish. And the developers would be saying, well, you know, this framework's outdated, we want a new version. So actually coming up with the reasoning behind why you'd be working on something first, you know, settling that by what the users are saying makes a lot of sense as well, and gives that kind of like external voice to settle those arguments.
I suppose there's only one more thing really to talk about, and that's reporting on what you're doing. So this is a really important thing, and I think we've been guilty of it in the past, and everyone out there will probably be kind of nodding along with us that you know, that's something that actually provides massive value to the team you're working with. So you've got to be giving reports regularly on where you're at, like what's happening, and that could be face to face, it could be, you know, calls, it could be documents it's sending over. But we found that projects go a lot better when risk is shown early, you know, a change in direction is communicated quickly, and just that you're being open about how long things are taking and how, you know, how one task might be going over its estimate a little bit. And that's something that's you know, it's just vital really to any team that's kind of collectively working on a big complicated product.
Tom, if you were to summarize those previous 4 points, how would you do it in a list?
I can do it. It's 4 things in the list.
Good.
The 4th key things to think about are communication, visibility, planning, and then reporting. If you can get a grip on all of those, I think it stands you in really good stead to have a successful project. You know, you'll kind of notice that we're not really giving a lot of solutions here. Like the way that we implement stuff versus how you do it, they'll be different, and every project's completely different. But those are the things that I think are like really important for people to focus on when working with any external team, really. It doesn't have to be a UX and dev team. But implement that well, build a workflow that works for you and your client or your partner, and you know, it should go swimmingly. Thanks for listening. If you want more product leadership content, then head over to the Lighthouse site, wearelighthouse.com, for more podcasts and blogs. To find out more about our product leadership framework, check out wearelighthouse.com/PLF. Find us on Twitter using @WeAreLighthouse, and if you've enjoyed the show, then we'd love a rating in iTunes to help spread the word. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to see the archive and get any future shows. Until next time, we'll see you then.